Balanced Ballerinas community. I'm your host, Georgia Dostal, and welcome to the Balanced Ballerinas podcast. Join me on this journey where sometimes we explore mindset, sometimes self-development, sometimes the transformative power of movement. Sometimes we talk about nutrition, sometimes it's small business insights, goal setting. But of course, what we're all here for, our mutual love and respect for the profound impact that ballet can bring to our daily lives, all while seeking just that crucial balance within this beautiful art form. In every episode, you'll get an exclusive peek behind the curtain of my life, managing two thriving businesses, GC Dance for school-age students and Balanced Ballerinas, catering to the adult ballet community. Tune in as I bring you conversations with incredible guests aiming to inspire you to really just find that delicate balance between grit and grace, embracing the beauty that a regular ballet practice can bring to our daily lives. This podcast, as always, is proudly sponsored by Balanced Ballerinas Academy, offering in-person adult ballet classes and online courses. I'd love you to check out the show notes for links to join our fantastic community or visit balancedballerinas.com. I'm thrilled to introduce today's guest, the one and only Dr. Andrea Robertson. She is a powerhouse and an expert in all the things. She's an osteopath, a naturopath, a nutritionist, a business coach, and most importantly, she's our resident nutritionist throughout the Balanced Ballerinas 12-week adult ballet course. So a lot of the listeners will be really excited who've done the course to hear Dr. Andrea on the pod. You'll be familiar with her voice and you know that the content and the conversation is going to be good today. But more importantly than that, she's also my dear friend. She's one of those people that I can go to for almost anything and things that I can't necessarily go to other friends about. I always go to her with dance studio or business questions, and you know, she's just always there for me and I adore her. And those that have followed along the Balanced Ballerinas podcast journey, you'll know that Dr. Andrea and I became friends from the very first time I interviewed her. I actually came across her work and I was like, I need to find this woman and I need to know her. We need to be friends. I'm just so inspired by her. And I happened to be traveling to Adelaide, where she was at the time, for work. And I said, would you like to meet up and record for the podcast? And she was like, yeah, sure. She took a gamble on this random Gold Coast girl that came knocking on her door. And the rest is history. I just adore her. She has a remarkable array of qualifications in osteopathy and advanced diplomas in naturopathy and nutrition. And Andrea's expertise is really vast and varied. Like I said, she's based in Port Fairy in Victoria nowadays. And Andrea's impact really extends, though, globally throughout her online consultations and coaching programs. And drawing from her extensive experience as a former professional dancer, Andrea brings a really unique perspective to her practice. It's one of the reasons why when I was creating my 12-week adult ballet course, she was the person I wanted first and foremost as the resident nutritionist, because she's got that dance background. She knows what we want to talk about, what we want to hear, and she can totally relate. So having performed on really prestigious stages such as the Moulin Rouge in Paris and Carnival Cruises in the US, she intimately, like I said, she just understands the demands of a dancer's lifestyle. So she's just a perfect guest for my not only podcast, but my online coaching. So today, Andrea is on a mission to empower women over 35 to really break free from the cycle of dieting and just embrace a sustainable, science-backed approach to health and wellness. And additionally, she actually also mentors health, wellness, and fitness professionals in creating and scaling online coaching programs for true freedom and success. So if you are a dance teacher or a fitness instructor and you're listening and you're wondering how you can scale for success, she is your go-to girl. With a holistic approach to healthcare, Andrea really seamlessly integrates hands-on work with naturopathic principles to just address a wide range of health concerns, from digestive issues to chronic fatigue and really just beyond. So join us as we dive into Andrea's wealth, truly wealth of knowledge and experience. Just exploring a topic that I have been asked by many listeners to address on the pod, navigating and managing perimenopause and menopause. It's something that hasn't really crossed my mind. I'm embarrassed to admit that. It should have. But as students were asking me, can we, you know, can I talk about that on the pod and bring on a guest? Because obviously they knew me alone was not going to be able to talk about this by myself. I just figured, yes, this is like a really important topic to have a chat about. So you ask and you shall receive. Here it is. And I found it really interesting because before I know it, I'll be entering that stage of my life too. And as you'll hear in the discussion, it really can happen any day from now. So without further ado, let's welcome my dear friend, Dr. Andrea Robertson, to the podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Balanced Ballerinas podcast for the second time, Miss Andrea.
Thank you. It's so exciting to be here, especially because we became such good friends after the first one.
I know. This is the second time, isn't it? It's not the third.
No, it's our second time.
Second. Oh, I thought so. I wasn't sure. Now, for those that watch this on YouTube, you can show them your t-shirt.
Yes. I had to wear like a dance t-shirt for a dance podcast.
I love it. Yes. So for those that don't know, we do know each other very well, and the first time we recorded an episode for the podcast was when we fell in love with one another, and the rest is history. And now you're also a very familiar face and name in my 12-week adult ballet course. You're the resident nutritionist, and everyone who does the 12-week course gets to know you through that. And so we just always look for ways to collaborate. And today I have a very important topic, something that, because I'm not at that stage in my life, I really haven't thought of, but I had quite a few students, my adult students, say, Georgia, can you please cover this topic? So you're here to help me pretend that I'm a dummy and go from there.
Excellent. So should we jump straight into it, darling, and talk about the difference between perimenopause and menopause, and how do we know if we're there or not there? Like, it's such a confusing time for girls, mostly 40s and above, but it can start even in late 30s. So it's good to kind of know what you're looking out for. But perimenopause is this like time of your life in that can be up to 10 years before you hit menopause. And menopause is officially diagnosed when it's been that life phase that's 1 year after your last period. So we don't know you're definitely in menopause until you've had a 1 year past your last period.
Oh, okay.
So you're in menopause for a year before you actually know about it, because you've got to have that tick the box.
Yeah.
And then some people will have like, when I can talk from experience at the moment, because I'm 47 and a half, and my periods get like long, sometimes short, sometimes long, sometimes short, sometimes with the cycles. And each time it's a long one, I'm like, maybe this is it. But then I get another period, so it's not. But it's when we get that, 1 year past, that's when we're in menopause. But up to 10 years before that can be perimenopause.
Okay.
Bodies are changing. Our brains are changing. We get all these like weird symptoms, but they are temporary because it's just a life phase that we pass through.
So how do you know you're going through perimenopause?
We start to get some wonderful weird symptoms. But it's, can I talk about the science? Because you know I love the science, Georgia, first. I'll talk about the science and then I'll talk about some of the symptoms. But we think about our hormones. We've got two main female hormones, estrogen and progesterone, and they go through different patterns and cycles. And, you know, as a teenager, we have a sort of lower estrogen and then starting to fluctuate progesterone. And that's what perimenopause is like. So it's almost like a second puberty. Mm. So we have this low estrogen, fluctuating progesterone, and same at the other end. And then when we come to actually menopause and the period stop, we have low estrogen and low progesterone. So this is where it kind of starts. It sort of starts as a teenager and finishes like the same in our 40s. But we end up with low estrogen and some significant changes to our insulin metabolism as well. So I do want to talk about that a bit more later on. But the symptoms, how do we know we're in it? You don't really, like, there's no blood tests to tell you that you're in it.
I thought there would be.
Well, you kind of can, but estrogen, yes and no. It's like you can't just have a blood test one day and go, yes, you're in perimenopause or menopause or not. But you can, well, menopause, yes, but you can't for perimenopause, no, because you have to have two times something called follicle stimulating hormone over 40, two in a row. So you can't just go one day blood test, am I or aren't I in perimenopause?
Yeah.
If you get a couple of blood tests at different times, you can, but estrogen's still fluctuating. So markers of estrogen isn't really enough until we get to menopause, but then you know you're in it anyway because you haven't had a period. So.
Yeah, gotcha. Oh my gosh, why are we so complicated?
And then women who are on like the oral contraceptive pill or the Mirena kind of don't know what's happening underneath anyway, because it's all masked by the synthetic hormones that they're taking. So then that makes it even more complicated, Georgia.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And so if we bring this back to mainly our topic today, talking about whether it's a professional or pre-professional or adult dancers, or, you know, can you explain how menopause can really affect dancers, particularly in terms of the physical changes and challenges?
Yes. Affect dancers. Well, essentially, gosh, there's so many levels on this. So the perimenopause part, how it affects you, is you can have crazy mood changes. You can have higher increase of anxiety and depression. You can have extra tummy weight gain. You can get very fatigued and tired. That's kind of some of the main things, but it's really, you just got to be able to manage those symptoms, which is very doable. Like I don't actually have any of those symptoms. And then there's also the night sweats that can come as well at times. But if we do all the right things, which I know you and I are going to talk about later on, we can manage that and really have it not affect us so much. And then when we get to menopause, it's a normal life phase. Like it's nothing to be scared about. And do you know what I think, Georgia? I think it's wonderful that we get to go through perimenopause and menopause, because it means we get to age, which is a wonderful privilege that some people don't ever get to do. So don't be scared of menopause, and it's not an illness or a disease that you have to fix. Like it's a life phase that we're going through. And so when we get to menopause, the things us dancers need to know is that the lower estrogen that we were talking about before does affect your bone health and bone strength, and it also affects your muscle mass and strength, because estrogen, that hormone, its job is to keep our bone strong and to keep our muscles, give us muscle mass and keep our muscles strong. So you can kind of see as we get to menopause, if they drop off, like if our estrogen drops off, we have to do other things to maintain our bone strength and other things to maintain our muscle mass and strength.
Like ballet.
Like ballet. And you know, there is this, you're going to love this because I don't think you know this, but there was some studies done and I cannot remember who it was because it was years ago I learned this and I sort of incorporated it into all my clinical work, but a functional medicine practitioner in the US did some studies, and I remember doing a training with her, and she said 50 jumps on the spot every day, like 50 little sautés on the spot every day, is a better prevention for osteoporosis than any osteoporosis medication. So there you go, ballet.
Yep. I've had so many clients talk to me about, since starting ballet, that their osteoporosis results have improved. Yeah. And their doctors go, what have you been doing? Because they're not supposed to improve. Their doctors tell them, you know, oh, it'd be great if you could just sort of keep it here and not let it deteriorate any further, but it actually improves. So
well, there you go. It makes sense. So maybe with that little bit of study, you could incorporate 50 sautés into every class now with your adult ballerinas.
Well, it's so funny. I was actually just talking to my students the other day about this, the fact that there's a lot of adult ballet teachers who don't incorporate any Allegro in classes. And I'm like, this is a missed opportunity. And also, not only do you want to give your students a full ballet education, and Allegro is part of that, but it's also so good for your bones.
Yes, 100%. And as long as, I mean, I know you teach the most beautiful technique, and we really need to teach our clients to land properly from a jump. But if they can land properly, they're not going to injure themselves.
Mm.
And you know that I don't teach ballet anymore, but I teach bar classes. And so in the bar classes, my clients still jump. And I'm constantly like, soft landing, bend your knees, like all the stuff we need to teach to make the jump safe. But jumping's so important.
Yeah, so important. So other than sort of movement, like as a nutritionist and osteopath, what dietary and lifestyle recommendations do you typically suggest those experiencing menopausal symptoms?
You know what? There's five kind of main areas, diet and lifestyle, that I look at with my perimenopause and menopause clients. So let's go through each of those. The first one, because our body becomes less sensitive to insulin. And so we have to really work on preventing or reversing insulin resistance so that we can maintain a healthy weight, because we don't have to, you know, be like a professional dancer size, but we need to maintain a healthy weight so that we are preventing, you know, occurrences of chronic diseases and lowering our risk factor for other chronic diseases associated with carrying extra weight or obesity. So insulin resistance is where your body, we eat some food, we take glucose into our bloodstream, the glucose levels in our bloodstream rise, insulin is released from the pancreas, and its job is to pull the glucose levels down so that we have a maintained stable amount of glucose in our bloodstream at all times. So insulin resistance is when the body is resistant to those effects of insulin, and the insulin can't pull down the glucose, and we have too much glucose floating around in our blood. So what we need to do is make sure we don't have too much sugar. But if we do have any foods that have sugar, we need to have fiber with them. So if you think about a glass of orange juice with all the pith taken out of it, and it's just straight orange juice, yeah, versus an orange. So an orange is beautiful natural sugars with fiber. And a glass of orange juice with all the pith taken out, there's not a lot of fiber left. Mm-hmm. And so that would raise our blood sugars much higher, and then insulin kind of has an effect on that. But if we have the orange, we've got the fiber in there, which slows down the rise of the blood sugar in our body. Even if there is a little insulin resistance, it has enough to, you know, it can cope with that. So always having fiber with any time you have sugar. Yeah.
That's why you leave the peel on the apple.
Exactly. Yeah, we want all that fiber in there. And I say, you know, we were allowed to have a little bit of chocolate, of course, but if you're having chocolate, maybe have it with a couple of nuts. So you're getting some fiber with some chocolate, not just having a little hit of chocolate without any fiber added in as well.
So, well, so we can have fruit and nut chocolate then.
Exactly. Except probably those, the dried fruit in the fruit and nut chocolate is probably even extra sugar that you don't need, but, you could go for the, like almonds or hazelnut chocolate or something. A little bit. So that's number one, is we've got to look at reversing or preventing insulin resistance by just really watching how much sugar we put into our body that isn't linked to fiber. Number two is following an anti-inflammatory diet. Now, this is a tricky piece because it's actually different for everybody. And, you know, that's what I am fully focused and passionate about inside of my 12-week coaching program. And it does take a lot to figure it out. And with my clients, we do a elimination of inflammatory foods or common pro-inflammatory foods, and then we add them back in because everybody's different, to work out what inflammatory food suits them. But there's some big common ones. So there's sugar again, processed sugars without the fiber, alcohol, cow's dairy can be quite pro-inflammatory for some people, and gluten for some people. Yes. So it's a tricky thing for me to say, Georgia, on here, because you wouldn't want everyone to go no gluten, no dairy, no sugar, no alcohol, because everyone's different. But it is nice to take it out for a couple of weeks
and see how the body reacts.
And see how your body reacts. Yeah. It's a bit more complicated than that, but that's kind of a good starting point anyway, and needs to be really a minimum of 3 weeks of taking it out. Then you can add it back in, and you need to listen to your body for signs of inflammation, which can be symptoms or fluid retention or fatigue or tiredness, weight gain even overnight, like weird weight gains, which is not putting on fat. It can be an inflammatory response in the body. So that's number two, figuring out what your anti-inflammatory diet is, following that. You know all about that too, don't you? Because we've talked about that before, and I know you follow a pretty anti-inflammatory diet for you.
Yeah, just mainly also for my eczema. So I'm really used to taking a lot of things out. And I know that dairy is a bit of a trigger for me. And so I can go through periods where I, you know, am fine with dairy. Interestingly, during pregnancy, I was smashing cheese and full cream milks, and I craved it and I wanted it, and my skin was perfect. But the moment I wasn't pregnant anymore, my eczema started flaring back up again. I was like, oh, I have to take all this back out.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, the body changing. And this is the same with perimenopause and menopause. Your hormones change. So what used to work for you before.
Yes.
And same with pregnancy, may not work now, because our hormones is making our body's environment different. Yeah, interesting that you say that about pregnancy, because it's kind of just another phase of life when your hormones are all over the shop.
Yes, yes. When you were talking about night sweats before, I was like having flashbacks to my night sweats, and I just didn't, I was so in the thick of it. I just thought I was tired, but then everyone started telling me, oh no, that's really normal. Like after having a baby,
yeah,
like I was dying.
Yeah, it's really normal. Okay, so, I'll just do for a second. Here we go. I was just turning off an alert on my computer so it didn't annoy us, but then I lost you. Okay, number three is making sure you get on top of any underlying health concerns or issues. So that's more of a lifestyle thing versus a nutrition diet thing, or not. It can be all intertwined. Mm. But for example, if someone's got really bad gut health, we need to get on top of that. Or if someone's got any autoimmune conditions, we need to get on top of that. Because when you're in your 40s, because our bodies are going through these changes, 40s and 50s, if you've already got one autoimmune condition, like maybe Hashimoto's or psoriatic arthritis or rheumatoid arthritis, some of these common autoimmune conditions, you can often gather other ones. So we can start gathering more and more autoimmune conditions. So we really need to get on top of any underlying health concerns. Mm. And then our nervous system takes a bit of a hit with perimenopause and menopause as well. So really making sure you balance your circadian rhythms and get some good sleep and soothing your nervous system. And Georgia, it's so funny, like you're probably sleeping, well, maybe not sleeping so well with Bo now, but if you didn't have Bo, you'd be sleeping well in your 30s. But when you get into your 40s, it can be, you know, sometimes I lay there and go, I am tired, but I'm so wide awake. But I have lots of little tools in my toolbox and breath work, and I make sure I don't scroll on my social media when I jump into bed, because I could do that in my 30s. But now if I do that, I invariably will have a poor night's sleep in my 40s. So little things like that change, and you need to have kind of a whole system of tools in your toolbox for balancing your nervous system, keeping your circadian rhythms in balance. It's almost like one of the most basic things is to just get up at a set time every morning and go to bed at a set time every night. Because otherwise, if you sometimes wake up at 5 one day and then sleep until 8 another day, and then some days on the weekends you sleep until 9, or, you know, your body doesn't know what it's doing. So if we can balance those patterns, it really helps.
I feel like that consistency is key, and I've always felt better, like even since having kind of sleepless nights with Bo, I do feel a lot better when we've got like a set, this is when I go to bed, this is when we wake up. And if he even wakes up too early, I'm like, no buddy, you're coming in for cuddles, and you are going to just lie in bed until it's, you know, out of bedtime. Like trying to teach him. But yeah, it's tricky at the moment, but it's so valuable to do that. I was going to ask you, what's your current like wind down routine? Like, what do you do to, you know, reset and calm that nervous system before bed? I love knowing the specifics.
Yeah, I'm pretty good, because I think I do all the other stuff. So I actually sleep well most of the time. So it's more not what I do, it's what I don't do just before bed. But what I do in my everyday life is I always exercise. Like, I love exercise. And on the days if I don't do some exercise, I do find it a little bit harder to get to sleep.
Yeah.
That's one key thing. I know how to eat a beautiful anti-inflammatory diet that's right for me. So when I do that, I'm right. I don't drink alcohol. So any of my clients who are poor sleepers, when we cut alcohol out, significantly improves their sleep. And so fatigue and tiredness is a big part of menopause and perimenopause, and as soon as we take alcohol out, like, it makes such a difference, because the liver is working so much overtime anyway with sorting out all these hormones and extra hormones that are going on and changes. So that if you layer alcohol in on top, it's just another thing for the liver to deal with, and it can't quite cope so well. The things I make sure I don't do is scroll on social media at nighttime, because I know that disrupts my sleep.
Yeah.
And I will do breath work. So if I jump into bed and I can't sleep well, I do box breathing. So I do five counts in, hold for five counts out, hold for five counts. And usually I do five of those and that's it, I forget.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's like, for me, Georgia, it's not a nighttime routine. That's everything I'm doing through the whole day, and it sets me up for beautiful sleep that night.
From waking up at the same time, right through. Yeah.
I wake up at the same time. I go to bed at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
In the evenings, like we don't watch a lot of television in our house, and we'll always turn the lights down a bit low. Like that's a really good tip, just to, in that last hour before you go to bed, not have any bright lights going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. So. Yeah, I do that too. I can't stand the lights like super bright at night. Like I don't know how people have like full kitchen lights on. Like I need it to be like super dim.
Yeah. Well, it's so good because it's setting yourself up for a really beautiful sleep. And then the final one of my five little points I was talking about is just making sure you're doing the right exercise. Because I see so many of my clients come to me running way too much. Like it's a running thing because they're like panicking because they're putting on weight. And then when they're in their 30s, they used to like restrict diet for like a couple of weeks and then go for a run and they'd lose weight and then they'd feel better. Perimenopause does come with a little bit of extra, if there's insulin resistance, a little bit of extra weight gain. So it's not, and also because our nervous system is more susceptible to stress, if you run, it's more of a stress on your nervous system. So a lot of my clients are like, I'm not losing weight, I'm running every day. And as soon as I stop them from running every day, the weight starts to fall off. So really, the stuff we're talking about before is that resistance-based training and strength work is so important in this life phase versus cardio for days. Like a little bit like what we do in a ballet class with Allegro and a little, you know, movement piece, but it's not that long-held cardio that's going to, you know, an hour of that high intensity that's going to put stress on your nervous system.
Yeah.
We want to do nurturing movement for our nervous system.
I feel like the world is waking up to that. Like it was so trendy and faddy to, you know, like restrict what you're eating and cardio, cardio, cardio. And now the world's waking up to gentler forms of exercise and, you know, realizing the nervous system's impact on our bodies and our ability to lose weight in regards to that, or just maintain, just simply maintain, you know, a beautiful, healthy weight. And so that's one of the reasons also why I think things like adult ballet are booming, you know, Pilates are booming, because people are seeing real results from that movement. Plus they're not punishing their bodies. They're actually doing something that they're enjoying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I know, like, you know, I've done it all before, George. I love exercise classes and I did CrossFit. And
me too.
Yeah.
we've both done it all.
Plus always dancing, but I have a back injury, so I actually can't dance anymore because it's too uncontrolled for my back. But bar classes gives me that same feeling of dancing and I can control myself a little bit more there. It keeps you so beautifully strong and bar is all based on ballet. It's all the same kind of stuff.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, and perhaps, you know, this is not necessarily probably for your recreational adult ballerina. It's probably more just dancers in general, more on that professional path. How could they sort of, it's a tricky question, like adapt their training regime to transition through menopause and this time? Like what kind of adjustments are they going to need to make besides all the lifestyle things? Like what would your suggestions be there?
So for the more professional dancers.
Like how can they help themselves cope? I mean, they'd probably, in all honesty, be transitioning into retirement, let's face it, most definitely. But, yeah.
Unless you're Sylvie Guillem.
Yes. But even just your dance teachers, to be honest.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, you know, how do we cope during that time?
It's exactly the same stuff as I was talking about before, like really nurturing your nervous system and weight-wise. And changing your training up is just to do more weights and resistance-based training, cut out the big long cardio, rest is so important. And aches and pains are more common in your body too. So especially, I mean, it's all intertwined with everything we've been talking about, but often you get frozen shoulder or tennis elbow or Achilles tendonitis or hip bursitis, like these itises become more common in this age and stage as well. And every time I see when a client can reduce their inflammation in their diet, that anti-inflammatory diet, a lot of those aches and pains disappear as well. Mm-hmm. So there's not one, you know, one thing you should do to change your training regime, because you might have these aches and pains that you have to look at, not just changing your exercise and movement, but changing your nutrition, and then all, and resting and supporting your nervous system. Like, it's all of that stuff coming together.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because oftentimes I will have this conversation with clients who, and students who are sort of recommended by their, you know, GP or whatever, like, oh, well, maybe you should cut out all the ballet that you're doing or all the exercise you're doing, and you should, you know, rest a little bit more and, you know, I'm using air quotation marks, listen to your body. And it's like, no, I think that that can be the worst thing. I love my clients and my students who say, I got to keep moving it, otherwise I'll lose it.
Yeah, you have to move. I mean, like, perfect example, when we get to menopause, we don't have estrogen in our body anymore. Mm. And the only way we can maintain strong bones and strong muscles and muscle mass to prevent something called sarcopenia, which is when your muscles waste away, the only way we can do that is through exercise.
Mm.
Like, yeah, it's so important. You cannot definitely stop moving your body. Exercise, sleep, good nutrition, like an anti-inflammatory diet, they're the basics, but they're so important.
And I think that keep moving it or you lose it sort of goes into my next question. I was going to ask you about your perspective on mindset and like the mental health of someone going through menopause and managing those symptoms. Like, what strategies would you recommend for maintaining like a positive mindset throughout, you know, this experience?
Yeah, I think it's really a reframe, because a lot of us, I think I touched on it a little bit before, but people go, oh God, menopause, it's so scary, and I don't want to do it. And if they treat it like an illness or a disease, it can be very, have a negative connotations. And anxiety and depression is more common because of the changes our body's going through. So it can all kind of escalate on top of each other. But everything we've talked about before can help lower anxiety and depression. And then knowing that you're not alone can be really powerful, like seeking support from other women who are going through the same thing. So you can be like, is this normal? Is this normal? Yes, it is. Okay. Like, everyone's experiencing this. And I think this age and stage in Georgia, you're doing exactly the right things of what we should be doing. That's spreading the message and letting people know what it's about. Because I didn't know anything about perimenopause and menopause. I'm a naturopath and I didn't know anything really about it until I hit my late 30s, because I wasn't interested in it.
Yeah.
Now I need to know for me, and I need to know for my clients, because they kind of grow with me.
Yeah.
But it's a normal life transition. And as soon as we can be grateful for that, grateful for getting older. And I always, you know, I think about, for me personally, my mum went through breast cancer when she was in her late 30s and early 40s. And she was a lucky one. She lived and is here to tell the tale. But I don't want to be like a lot of her friends that didn't make it, and where we don't, you know, where I don't get to live a long, healthy life. And so going through menopause, perimenopause, and landing through menopause is a privilege. So it's a reframe of thinking it's not a disease, it's a privilege, because we have the privilege of getting older.
We live in such like a anti-aging society. And even now, I mean, I know it doesn't really have anything to do with menopause, but I know that sort of entering mid-30s, just watching everybody's faces, my friends, my colleagues, just different people's faces who started aging and then all of a sudden aren't aging. And like, I'm, you know, as I'm, you know, talking to you, I can see my wrinkles pop up, like, because my face still has expression, and everyone else's, you know, around my age group, their faces are starting to freeze. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, and I started thinking, oh, do I need to do that? And, you know, do I need to get some Bobo? And it's just interesting, like, my mindset went a little bit haywire for a little while there, especially having Bo, because, you know, you sit up at 2 a.m. thinking, oh my God, I look so tired. Like, and I, you know, just talking about mindset, I stopped following a few accounts that were making me feel bad about myself. Yeah. I started talking to friends about it, and it was really interesting, because some friends, I was focusing on the friends that had done stuff to their faces instead of the friends that hadn't. And so we had really healthy conversations about it. And yeah, there's a lot to be said about your community and actually talking about things and making it less taboo.
And you can always talk to me, because I'm never going to put my face. Like, it's just, I think, again, it's the same thing. Perimenopause and menopause is a privilege. Having some wrinkles is a privilege. It means we're getting older, and it means we're still here.
Mm.
And I don't want to be that person that fights that. I really, we're getting on a different topic here, but it's such an important topic for women at this age.
It's sort of similar.
Be grateful for getting older and be grateful for being, we can all be beautiful as we age. We don't have to look 21 when we're 51. Like we shouldn't.
And shouldn't. Yeah, shouldn't. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Someone actually said to me one time after class, one of my adult students, oh, how do you feel? I think this is last year after my birthday. Oh, how do you feel? Like you're getting up there, like you're not the young 20-something studio owner anymore. One day, you know, you might not be able to do all this, because I think I'd just finished demonstrating like some big Allegro exercise.
Yep.
And I was like, actually never even crosses my mind ever. And like, I plan on doing everything as full out as I possibly can until I'm like 99 years old, or even 100.
Yeah.
It doesn't worry me. Like, aging is just not, I mean, besides me talking before about the wrinkle thing, I feel like I put that in a different box, but like the actual aging, I really do feel like it's a privilege. And I was one of those kids that couldn't wait to be older. Like, I spoke to you about this many, many years ago. I couldn't wait until I was in my, where I am now, like my sort of heading into mid 30s. Cause I feel like now I'm taken a little bit more seriously as a ballet teacher, business owner, studio owner. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't wait. I felt like everyone was like, oh, just little Georgia in a little studio. Like, and now it's like, you know, I love what comes with age, like a little bit more. Yeah. A little bit more taken wisdom, seriously.
Yeah. Wisdom and maturity as well. Like, I feel like me personally, I don't miss out on any fun. I still have so much fun. I enjoy all that, but I've just got a little bit of wisdom to go with it that I didn't have when I was perhaps younger.
Yeah.
you know, I tell you the other interesting thing about aging is, like, I've got a back injury, which I wouldn't have had younger because I pushed myself, and my back injury is related to being a very hypermobile, flexible dancer for so many years. So that sometimes is the only thing about aging that I'm like, but there's a piece of acceptance that we can't always do what we used to be able to do. And for a little while there, like, I would watch things on social media and see all these amazing dancers, and I'm like, oh, Instagram didn't even exist when I was young, and I would have been able to dance rings about them if I could put stuff on Instagram. Like, I had that little piece in my head going on, and now I can't even kick my legs above 90 degrees, and I used to be able to hit myself in the head. But again, like, you just have to make peace with some of these things, and the whole mindset piece again of being grateful that we're still here is my biggest key.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was going to sort of wrap up our conversation with any misconceptions or myths about menopause that you encounter, and how do you want to address those to sort of wrap this up?
Yeah, the misconceptions and myths, I think you touched on it before too, Georgia, with doctors saying you need to stop exercising. Like, that's a big misconception. Do not stop moving your body. You don't need to stop. And the other misconception and myth is that the symptoms are normal. They're not normal, but they're common, but they don't need to be normal. So you don't need to accept them as a normal part of your life with these symptoms that you're experiencing, because there's something you can do about all of the symptoms, like nutrition, the right supplements, doing a lot of these mindset and lifestyle practices that we're talking about as well.
I love that you said that. I had a really similar discussion for the podcast in a previous episode with Pat, who's a physiotherapist and specializes in females and pregnancy and post-birth. And so many of the symptoms afterwards, or even just like bladder issues and whatnot, she said they're really common, but they don't have to be normal. Super common, but they don't have to be normal. So to put in like a little bit of work, do the follow-up appointments and do the little exercises. And, you know, because she came to the studio to record the episode. And before we got to actually sit down and have a chat, no surprise, mum grabbed her in the foyer and they started talking about it. And she was like, oh my God, like, I always need to pee, like when I sneeze, blah, 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 like too much information. I'm like, mum, I'm like, just stop hijacking my interview. Kat and I have to go upstairs and have a chat. And she was just saying to mum, like, you know, you're a perfect example of like, it was just told to you that that's just normal. Like, that's just what happens after you have a baby and you got to put up with it. And she's like, you don't actually have to put up with it. And it's actually not too late to deal with it. And so one of the reasons why, and I, you know, when this episode comes out, I'll really implore people that are my age to have a listen, because it's setting ourselves up in the right mindset for when this time comes to manage it effectively and realize that we don't have to feel a certain way.
Yes, and start the conversation early. Like, it's the best, most important thing, because then when you start to get a few of these weird symptoms, like what's happening with my body, you can be like, ah, I've heard about this before. This is common, but it doesn't have to be normal. And then you can get appropriate support.
Yeah, because it can really derail someone who's, you know, either, well, just especially someone who their body is their tool, you know, for what they're doing, you know, their profession. So, yes, no, it's an important chat, but thank you so much for bringing your expertise, as always.
Pleasure. You know, I love talking to you anytime on podcast or off podcast.
I know. And we're just so flat out these days with our different things going on that it's like, it's nice to just schedule in a business chat or something for the pod because it's like, oh, we get to catch up.
Exactly.
But what can you share with the audience, what you're sort of doing at the moment, what you're working on, where we can find you, anything you want to share?
I have a beautiful website, andrearobertson.health. You can find all the things I do there. You can find me on Instagram at same thing, andrearobertson.health. And I run 12-week nutrition mindset movement programs for women over 35 who want to lose weight and keep it off and just start to thrive with energy and body confidence as they get a little older. And, of course, we talk a lot about perimenopause and menopause in there because of the age group we're with. And I do a little business coaching too, so that's another side, but it's more the health stuff that we'll talk about today here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You're fabulous. And I already know that there's so many Balanced Ballerinas that are in your little universe and are already reaping the rewards of your program. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.